This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Mitchell Gerber. He is a human rights activist and against organ harvesting in China, and he is an advocacy director for StopOrganHarvesting.org. Mitchell, it is great talking to you, and it's important to inform our audience about this issue.
Well, great. Thanks, Robert. And hello, everybody. I'm glad to be here on the show. Yes, it is very important, extremely important, as you'll hear in the segments to come and the sound bites and the information that follows.
What originally brought your attention to the issue of organ harvesting in China?
Well, I have been an advocate for about 17 years. I studied international relations in the University of Georgia in the United States. I'm an American citizen, born in South Africa. I've spent the last almost two decades trying to expose this new form of genocide that hasn't existed on such a large scale, scope, and magnitude in this world before. And why is it important for every human being to learn about this and to become aware, at least, about this atrocity and this new form of genocide? Well, the answer is simple. We all have human bodies. We all bleed the same blood, breathe the same air, and the vital organs in our bodies give us the vitality and the health that we need to live in this world. So imagine it was you or your family members that were forcefully blood tested, monitored, just in the middle of night or in the cover of darkness, thrown out of your homes by the secret police, placed into a labor camp, a death camp, carted off to a hospital, a state-mandated hospital, and your organs cut out of your body while alive with a little anesthetic just to sedate you so you can't fight back. The organs then taken out of your body while alive, ladies and gentlemen, and the organs then sold as the healthiest organs in the world, illegally without any consent, and your body's then burned in the boiler room of the ovens of the hospitals, and your family members then, the body's also plasticized and embalmed and sold for high profits to the body worlds around the world that are touring as the exhibition continues to this day to make money. Millions of dollars and now even billions of dollars a year in an industrialized, institutionalized organ trade business that hasn't existed in the past and hasn't existed on such a scale, scope, and magnitude as it does in the only country that is doing this, China, on such a large scale. This is not some back alley stealing of an organ or where some people have been accused and have been convicted as well to organ theft. This is industrialized, institutionalized organ harvesting of at least 100,000 each year, targeting four different groups of people, which I can get into a little bit later, and their organs just taken out of their bodies.
So the main group that's being targeted, there's a number of different groups, but I'm just going by the Wikipedia. There is actually a Wikipedia entry on this, and the Wikipedia entrance says that about 66% of victims of organ harvesting are Falun Gong practitioners. Can you talk about how you're actually a practitioner yourself, how you discover the Falun Gong, and how is that also, how is the practice of Falun Gong benefited you personally?
Oh, yes, Robert. Well, you know, guys, let me tell you, I used to do a lot of yoga, tai chi. I've always been a fitness enthusiast, health and wellness, nutrition. And I've always been fascinated and intrigued by Bruce Lee, martial arts, and the Eastern modalities and the Eastern efficacy of health and vitality, which is non-conformist. It's very unconventional. It follows a very comfortable and organic way of life. So when I came across Falun Gong, it's pronounced Falun Gong, as you pronounce it, Robert, very well. It's an ancient tradition for mind, body, and spirit, and it consists of moral teachings, basically to improve the moral character and the mind and the heart, based on being truthful, compassionate, and tolerant. All three universal principles that are found in Christianity, Buddhism, Taoism, even if you're atheist, it doesn't even matter. It's good to be a better person in business, in love, in family, in society in general. People like to be around positive people. People like to be truthful and be honest with each other. And that a lot of that is lacking. And especially in China, the lack of morality was really bad. So with Falun Gong, it amplified the moral rectitude of society. The teachings as well as the exercises, which encompass five exercises, four simple stretching and moving exercises that are standing, and one that is sitting. And these five exercises were so popular that by 1998, one out of every 12 Chinese national citizens were practicing Falun Gong. And you could see the highest level of the military dictatorship in China practicing this. The police were practicing. The seven highest ranking officials of the communist regime and their families were practicing. More than half of upper class society in China were practicing, from the rural villages. So you had about 100 million, between 70 and 100 million Falun Gong practitioners by 1998. And by 1999, the Chinese officials went so far as to quantify Falun Gong's benefits, such as when one official from China's National Sports Commission, he was speaking with U.S. News and World Report, declared that Falun Gong could save each person 1,000 yuan in annual medical fees. So if 100 million people are practicing it, that's 100 billion yuan saved per year in medical fees. Mr. Li Hongzhi, the founder of Falun Gong, has received a nominee for 5 Nobel Peace Prizes. He's received proclamations and honorary awards throughout all the world in about 115 different countries. And the same year, before the persecution and the crackdown on Falun Gong, which has become so brutal, and we'll discuss even leading into an atrocity that people think, I still think after 19 years, is unspeakably hard to believe, but it's going on and confirmed. But before the persecution, in the same year before that it happened, the People's Public Security News, the official news of China's Ministry of Public Security, praised the founder of Falun Gong, Mr. Li, for his contributions and quote, in promoting the traditional crime-fighting virtues of the Chinese people, in safeguarding social order and security, and in promoting rectitude in society. So this really truly became, Falun Gong became the life force of China. And after practicing for 16 years, guys, my body feels incredible. My mind, my breathing is better. I used to smoke a lot, drink a lot, party a lot. All clean. I don't drink anymore. I don't smoke anymore. I don't take drugs anymore. I'm much more kinder. I wake up every morning doing the exercises, or it can be done in any setting, whether you're in corporate, whether you are a CEO, whether you have a big family. The exercises are very easy to learn and are free. This is not a cult. There's no characteristics of a cult or sect or religion. This is a spiritual movement and a way of life that unfortunately has been demonized, persecuted, and now targeted for organ harvesting, pillaging for the last 19 plus years.
You mentioned that at some point there were high-ranking Chinese government officials who were practitioners of Falun Gong. At what point did the persecution begin, and what were the primary reasons for that persecution?
Absolutely. Well, like I said, one out of every 12 Chinese national citizens were practicing Falun Gong. And to understand how organ harvesting could happen in China in terms of how they targeted, at least it was 66% back in 2006. Now it's at least 90%. I would even say 95% by 2016, including other groups like House Christians and Uyghur Muslims and Tibetans. But at least 90 to 95% now has been targeted for Falun Gong, because the organs become really healthy after practicing Falun Gong. When you have a healthy mind and a healthy body based on the exercises that everyone was practicing in China, you would see hundreds and thousands, tens of millions of people by 1998 practicing. And because the Falun Gong reached a capacity of size and scope of 70 to 100 million people, ladies and gentlemen, that's 100 million people, 30 million more members or people practicing, because there's no membership really at all. It's just 30 million more people practicing that outnumbered the communist regime by 30 million people. So the largest practice and the biggest threat to the communist regime's size. Second of all, the ideology of Falun Gong, which teaches people to be truthful, compassionate, and tolerant, a kinder person in society, a better businessman in work, a better lover and a better husband or wife, a better parent in family, and an overall better citizen in society, clashed with the evil, barbaric nature of the communist regime under the CCP, which is the Chinese Communist Party. The Chinese government has been hijacked. The Chinese people have been hijacked, and China has been hijacked under a reign of terror that has destroyed between 60 and 100 million people alone in China, more than two world wars combined, and has decimated 5,000 years of Chinese traditional culture. And because the communist regime's hatred and jealousy, especially the president of the then communist party, the former president Jiang Zemin, he was very hateful and jealous that he couldn't control the hearts and the minds of at least 10% of the population, growing annually, monthly, weekly, and even daily in Falun Gong participation rate. And so he outlawed the practice. And then thirdly is because the exercises bring such an incredible health and tremendous benefit for the body and the mind and the philosophy as well. When you're grounded in more of a truthful and compassionate and tolerant nature and do the exercises, your body becomes really healthy. So before the crackdown of the persecution of 1999, you would see health research from cancer patients to tuberculosis to leukemia to hepatitis to ailments, all injuries, all different injuries and ailments were being healed within three or four months, of practicing. Even after the persecution, I was working with medical doctors and researchers in scientific and medical studies on the effects of Falun Gong, practicing it within the 3 to 6 to 1 year period versus a non-practitioner, and we would see how they would see how the DNA and the metabolic processes fascinatingly changing to increasing health, and even cancer patients, the terminal cancer patients, their tumors reducing, the symptoms reducing, they were living longer, feeling better and more healthier. So these are the three reasons: because of the size of Falun Gong, because of the ideology of Falun Gong, and because of the benefits of Falun Gong. That's why the communist regime outlawed it and has been killing them for their organs today.
So there has been a police agency that's set up to crack down on the Falun Gong. And many people have disappeared and been sent off to labor camps and forced to renounce their faith.
Yes, this is the most scary thing about this, is that on June 10th, 1999, right 1 year before, 1 month, excuse me, 1 month before the complete crackdown, or as they would say in Germany, Kristallnacht, when complete crackdown of the Jews in Nazi Germany, or in Rwanda, when the Hutus complete crackdown on the Tutsis and started killing hundreds and thousands of Tutsis a day, just macheting them, or in other genocides. 1 year before the crackdown of 1 month before the crackdown of Falun Gong on July 20th, 1999, on June 10th, a Gestapo-type Nazi agency, it was called the 610 Office, on June 10th, 1999, was established by the communist regime's evil head, Jiang Zemin. And he, along with his gang of scoundrels, created the 610 office that sits still to this day, a Gestapo-type Nazi office or communist-style office that sits on top of the government system controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, that controls all economic, social, and political spectrums in China for one purpose and one purpose only, to eradicate, weed out, and destroy Falun Gong, basically to declare war on Falun Gong and kill them for their organs and make this multi-billion dollar well, it was a multi-million-dollar industry. Now it's at least a $1 billion industry a year off their organs, because they knew how popular Falun Gong was, and they know how good the exercises are. So they tried to demonize Falun Gong as a cult. They tried to stage a self-immolation Hollywood kind of scene in Tiananmen Square in 2001. And I came to learn about this when I was practicing. And they staged a self-immolation of setting five or four Chinese people and a little girl on fire and say that this is what Falun Gong does. They kill themselves. They burn themselves, which is absolutely rubbish. It's absolutely garbage. And this severely poisoned the minds of the Chinese people in order to turn public opinion against them, and that's when they could get away with the sinister plan of killing the Falun Gong for the organs and making money off them.
There's a documentary out there that exposes this all, titled "The Persecution of Falun Gong." Were you involved in the production of this?
I wasn't, but I actually am what I'm doing is I'm promoting it, as well as the sound bites that I would love to share with you when you give me the go-ahead, of David Kilgore, David Mattis, and Ethan Gutman. This is one of many documentaries. There's also a documentary called Harvested Alive by a Chinese doctor, one of many who came out of China to talk about the organ harvesting. There's also a documentary about, as I said, Hard to Believe by Dr. Enver Totti, who sat with me and the investigators as well when we were doing the briefing at the UK Parliament, exposing the forced organ harvesting and brutal persecution of the Falun Gong and the other groups as well in China about 2 months ago in London. And Dr. Enver Totti is a surgeon. He was a surgeon in 1995. Since 1995, he moved to the UK and now is a bus driver in London. And he was forced by the communist regime to do an organ harvesting on a live person. And his testimony is quite telling. But if I may, Robert, I think it's one thing to hear my voice, but to really share with your listeners, to really convince them that this is going on, can I play a clip for you that was done in 2013, as early as 2013, by David Kilgore and Ethan Gutman, the main investigators?
Yes, go for it.
Okay. This is David Kilgore, this former Secretary of State of the Asian Affairs Cabinet Ministry of the Canadian Parliament, and David and Ethan Gutman, an award-winning journalist, China journalist and China watcher, and a nominee of the Nobel Peace Prize of 2018 on the BBC in 2013. Now remember, the allegations of forced organ harvesting on Falun Gong practitioners were confirmed in 2006. Their books came out in 2006, 2007, 2009, 2013, and now they have updated in 2016 at the Joint Committee Subcommittee hearing in Washington, D.C. The evidence is only getting bigger, but here is their depiction, and I think it's quite telling.
We talk a rather upsetting issue, allegations that have repeatedly been aired, that China plays a part in harvesting organs, mainly of executed prisoners. The numbers run to thousands every year. The organs then get sold on for transplants. It's always been vehemently denied by the Chinese government. But here in Britain, representatives of a campaign called Forced Organ Harvesting have been looking at the issue, and they've got as far as presenting their latest findings to the British Parliament. Two representatives join us here in the studio. Welcome to David Kilgore, former member of the Canadian Parliament, and Ethan Gutman, author of several books on China, who've both been involved in the investigations. They're here to tell us a little bit more. David Kilgore, if I could start with you, what are the latest findings of your investigation? What are you closing in on?
That about 65,000 Falun Gong practitioners have been killed and their organs trafficked. There are other people too, convicted prisoners are killed, of course, but the thing that we're focusing on is the Falun Gong community. My colleague Ethan Gutman has done a lot of work on the Uyghur community. He'll probably want to say something about that, but yeah, there's no doubt. We have 52 kinds of evidence that this is happening. To give it the easiest example, the wife of a surgeon told us that her husband had removed the corneas from 2,000 Falun Gong practitioners in a two-year period. So, I mean, this absolutely no doubt in anybody's mind. We've written, we've got two books on it, we've got all kinds of
things. And these, just to clarify, these come after judicial executions?
No, there is no judicial involvement in virtually all of the Falun Gong. That's the thing that nobody understands.
Okay, right, so we better clarify this, because we often cover the fact that China, of course, has one of the highest rates of execution, yeah. Judicial execution. It's their choice, that's what yeah. they do, and they're always there in the top three, along with yeah. Saudi Arabia and yeah. Iran. But yeah. this is something different.
Exactly, it's because a police signature is all you need to get sent to a forced labor camp, and then basically what happens is somebody from, it could be London, it could be Canada, goes over there for a liver. And there's a computer bank, and it says there's a match for you out in camp number 50, and somebody's dragged out of the camp number 50 into an operating room. Their liver's taken out of them. It's flown to Shanghai, where you're probably waiting for your liver, and you come back to London with a new liver, and somebody has been killed like a lobster in a grotesque restaurant.
Hang on a minute. So you're not even saying, because, I mean, it's one issue, the judicial executions and the use of the cadaver, which I suppose in a certain legal sense is the property of the state once the state has mm-hmm. killed the individual. But you're saying these are people being killed to order?
Precisely. And it's so, as you say, your horror shows how distressing it is. But yet it never gets mentioned that these are people who've been maybe giving out pamphlets asking them to stop killing Falun Gong, and they're guilty of nothing.
Ethan Goodman, also here. Can we step back just a moment before we talk more, a little more about this? I want to find out, there is a shortage of organs because people don't donate them. Is that why? What are the cultural reasons why there is this kind of shortfall that fuels this market that you allege you have evidence for?
Well, there is a cultural shortfall, but that's in part because the Chinese government has never really promoted it. They didn't have to. They have this massive supply, possibly, you know, up to 3 million prisoners out there. You know, of those prisoners, perhaps 25-30% are prisoners of conscience. Some people who aren't even in the system, never even registered into it. They just kind of, they disappear. These are people who often even don't get their names to protect their families or their locations. These people are prime candidates for organ harvesting.
Now, the allegation is, I mean, it's left me open-jawed, what you've just said. I have to ask you more precisely, what evidence do you have? Who have you spoken to, for example, who is actually involved in this trade that you allege is there?
Start in the beginning. In 1995, there's a man in this city, Enver Tonti, who you can interview yourself. I suggest you bring him on the program. He performed a live organ harvesting of a prisoner who'd been shot in the left side of the chest in a non-lethal way. He removed the kidneys and liver from this man. So you can start with that,
okay.
That acknowledgement, and then you can go to the massive evidence of prisoners, particularly Falun Gong, who were examined in Laogai and under extremely primitive conditions. And they're being tortured, and they're not being fed, and so on. But then they're taken to a modern hospital, just the Falun Gong. And there they look carefully at their corneas, not their eyesight, just their corneas.
So in effect, you allege that these prisoners are being catalogued for what might be saleable or useful as a body part.
No, I think we're alleging that they've been harvested to the scale of possibly, you know, 10-15% of these prisoners of conscience.
Okay. How does the market operate? Who controls it, therefore?
I think there we've got a lot. I think there's where the work needs to be done, is how is this market operated? As I understand it, there was a doctor, a surgeon in Taiwan, who was well aware of this because he used to argue for the Chinese price for his patients. And they said, well, you know what? We really love you, the other doctor said. So we're going to give you the Chinese price. Not only that, we're giving you all Falun Gong. These people don't smoke. They don't drink. They don't have hepatitis. And I asked him that question. Well, how's this done? He said through sort of an informal eBay system in China.
Right. So if there's an informal system, this also means that ultimately the Chinese government can deny any involvement in it, which they always have done. Yeah. They've said that they've been made aware of some of these problems and they have taken action to systematically root this out. That's what they've always said.
But there's one problem.
Briefly?
Yes. The six high-ranking officials checked into an Urumqi hospital in 1997, and they were waiting for organs. A young doctor was told to go into the political prisoner wing of the Uyghur prison, Uyghur, And there he had to examine the blood of all the political prisoners for these six high-ranking officials. China's a surveillance state.
What is going on now, though? You're saying that's an example from 1997. We're now in 2013.
But this is a surveillance state, and who gets watched? The medical hospitals, the military, the party members.
Well,
and that was from 2013, Robert and ladies and gentlemen.
One thing that is really crucial to point out from that testimony is it's not just within China. There's an international market for organs that originate from China. So can you talk more about the process? Who are the middlemen, organized crime, and who are the primary customers of these organs?
Absolutely. Well, there are four different groups of people, particularly the Falun Gong, that have been targeted. The Uyghur Muslims, the House Christians, the Tibetan Buddhists, but at least 90% as we speak now in this time for the last 19 years have been the Falun Gong, because the organs are so powerful, as I have just said about the exercises being so powerful for the body. When the persecution started after 1999, organ tourism skyrocketed. I mean skyrocketed. At least 50% increase in the United States, Canada, Korea, Pakistan, Thailand, so many different countries. The investigators have documented in their books Bloody Harvest and the slaughter, like you heard David Kilgore, at least 52 pieces of evidence. And the medical associations, rich, wealthy foreign donors, relatives who disguised themselves on telephone calls calling into China, and that's one of the soundbites I have with David Mattis, one of the investigators, that this is the evidence that they have received by calling the doctors, and the doctors were like, yeah, no problem, we have Falun Gong organs fresh, just like a grotesque hot restaurant where you're picking your lobster out of a tank. And these organs are being sold to, like I said, the medical associations, biotech firms. You have foreign donors, and as Ethan Gutton pointed out, wealthy Chinese citizens as well. So there is no doubt that this is going on, and the supply is endless, and the demand is very, very high. Because think about it, after committing this crime, you have no waiting times. I mean, the waiting times for an organ of basically a heart is at 3 to 5 years. The waiting times were huge. I mean, even to get a matched lung and kidney, you've got to wait a long time, at least a couple of years. You can get an organ in China on a specified date. And that's why there have been four countries that have outlawed this ban, or this organ tourism from China, particularly. Israel. A lot of people were saying, well, Israel's doing this. No, they're not doing it. ISIS is doing this on a smaller scale. You had Saudi Arabia, you have Iran, you have North Korea. China's the biggest. But Israel, and God bless Israel for banning organ tourism and organ transplantation, it has banned its citizens to go into China to get an illegal organ, after knowing what has gone on in China with the Falun Gong. The second country has been Taiwan, and Italy and Spain followed as well. But if I may, I would love to share with you another clip from Edward McMillan Scott.
One thing really quick is the United States has not issued an official ban yet.
Unfortunately, no. But I believe this has been going since four presidents: Clinton, Obama, Bush, and now Trump. But I think Trump hopefully will do something, because he definitely is going after the pedophile rings. I was at a child trafficking conference in London, and they mentioned about how Trump is actually going, and there have been articles about Trump going after pedophile rings. And on the first of the year of last year, or 2018 actually, of this year, Trump signed into law a human trafficking law that he is going after the child trafficking, and he mentioned about the Falun Gong. So I hope, with the State Department and the Justice Department, Obama did nothing, Clinton did nothing, Bush mentioned it here and there, but he did nothing. So hopefully, under Trump, something will change, but we're not crossing our fingers, because the intensity of economic pressure of China, where you have the entire consumer market of the West is basically funded and founded off the institutionalized slavery market of communist China. So we'll have to see about that. If Trump can stand up to China and say no, we are not allowing this anymore, and we are going to put bans in place and sanctions in place until you stop this murderous, abhorrent practice of killing Falun Gong practitioners, we won't do business with you. But that hasn't happened yet. In the four countries I've mentioned, Israel, Taiwan, Spain, and Italy, it has happened, but not in other countries yet, not even in Canada.
And a big issue is that China has a tremendous amount of economic leverage over the United States and Canada and a lot of countries, and I'm sure that includes the media as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's why I take my hat off to you, Robert, so for me to come on your show, because I've reached out to so many, and even the mainstream media, they don't touch this the show. They don't touch this topic because of the political pressures. Even the United Nations. I mean, I'm also part of Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting, a spokesperson for them, DAFOH. I do a lot of promotion and spokesperson for them, advocacy for them. And when I go on the shows, Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting had a petition to the United Nations, and they have just withdrawn it. Over 3 million people signed in support of stopping the organ harvesting, or at least getting the United Nations to get off their butts to do something about it. And yet they withdrew the petition in order to show the world the United Nations is still remaining silent. Another example of complicitness is the World Health Organization, which has just elected the former Deputy Minister of Health to its council. And this communist mouthpiece shill, operative basically, was one of the main perpetrators in the killing of Falun Gong for their organs. And so now he sits on the council of the World Health Organization, and because of this, the World Health Organization just recently has refuted the evidence made, confirmed by the investigators, the two that you've just heard, the one that I'm about to play for you, and other. And it's just shocking that history does repeat itself, and that these people are going along with the communist regime's rhetoric, covering up the communist regime's crimes, and not stopping this, and not standing on the right side of destiny. It's actually appalling. And that's why, from the media to the governing bodies, I take my hat off to you, Robert, for standing on the right side of destiny and giving me the opportunity to come on and share with your listeners. Even if I touch one person today who is listening, it's a testament to a good-hearted person that can position themselves on knowing what is true and what is honest and what is sincere, and giving a voice of support to Falun Gong, which I take my hat off to you.
Thank you. And you were saying you had an audio recording you wanted to play. Can you introduce that?
Sure. This is Sir Edward McMillan Scott, the former Vice President of the European Parliament. His testimony, and I think it's a very striking testimony. He is one of the investigators as well. He's one of the coalition members of Stop Organ Harvesting and to stop the persecution of Falun Gong. And I think this is very telling. Here we go.
Edward McMillan Scott.
Thank you very much indeed, Peter. Wrote a report on EU-China relations in 1996-7 for the Foreign Affairs Committee, and returned to Beijing in 2006, where I met ex-prisoners of conscience, Falun Gong practitioners, as well as made contact with a number of other dissidents and reformers. All the Chinese with whom I had contact were then imprisoned, and in some cases, like Gao Zhisheng, tortured. Gao Zhisheng is a Christian human rights lawyer, very, very well known in China, who investigated the persecution of Falun Gong and wrote reports about it. And one of the people I met, Cao Dong, who'd been in prison, told me the story about how his best friend had disappeared one evening from the cell in their prison. And the next time he saw him, it was his body in the prison hospital with holes where body parts had been extracted. The belief that I have, and I share with David Kilgore, that organ harvesting is widespread in China, and it is restricted almost exclusively to Falun Gong practitioners. The only prisoners in China who are routinely blood tested and blood pressure tested are Falun Gong practitioners. The organ transplant industry is in the hands of the military. The People's Liberation Army is responsible for the hospitals, the transportation of body parts, and the sale of them. It is therefore a governmental activity and constitutes genocide under Article 2 of the Genocide Convention. It is as serious as that. And my final word is, with respect to you, Peter, the Falun Gong are to the Chinese regime of today what the Jews were to the Nazis during the war. And we should all take note of this and look at China with new eyes. The European Parliament comes from a very diverse background, and as Peter has already said, even within this quite straightforward resolution, there are still problems, because the absolute deluge of propaganda from the regime in Beijing vilifying Falun Gong as some sort of extremist cult. Now, I've met, as I said, hundreds of members of Falun Gong. It is not a sect. It is not a cult. There is no money involved. There is no brainwashing. All the normal characteristics of a cult simply don't exist. These are people who practice their spiritual exercises on their own. And yet, as I said, because between 70 and 100 million people in 1999 were practicing Falun Gong, this was seen by Jiang Zemin, then the leader of the Communist Party, as a threat to his own position. It wasn't, of course, but he saw the opportunity of creating an enemy within. Just as during the war, the Nazis singled out the Jews as a special characteristic and did what they did to the Jews. The same is happening today to Falun Gong in China. That is why it is genocide. That's why I say it's so serious. As to whether we can convey this to all the members of the European Parliament, it's quite difficult. It is quite difficult, but we're trying, and that's what this press conference is about. There'll be other activities today and beyond.
And that was Edward McMillan Scott's testimony. I think it's quite striking to hear.
Can you tell me about the background information about McMillan Scott?
I don't know much about him because I haven't met him. I would have loved to. I invited him to London to participate in a briefing that I had with Dr. Enver Totti, the Chinese surgeon who did the testimony on the Falun Gong and his organ harvesting testimony. And Ethan Gutman and David Kilgore. But Sir Edward McMillan Scott, the Vice President of the former Vice President of the European Parliament, I haven't met and I don't know too much about it, but he is a true advocate, and as you can hear from his voice, his sincerity and his passion and his dire concern of the Falun Gong, he's done incredible work with the gentleman that I've just mentioned to expose the persecution. But unfortunately I have not met him. I have been in contact with him, but I haven't met him. But there was another person as well, Robert and everybody. She is a former beauty queen. Well, she is a beauty queen. Miss World Canada 2015 and 2016, Miss Anastasia Lin. Now, Miss Anastasia Lin is a Falun Gong practitioner. Her father also practices in China, and she was denied entry into the Miss World 2017 to participate because she practices Falun Gong. It was in China, actually, they were holding it. And so she has become a staunch advocate and goes around the world using her crown and her fame and her power to rally in support of Falun Gong and talk about the persecution. And I also have a clip of her in the European Union, if you would like me to play that for you.
Sure.
Okay, so I think this is a great depiction. And as you can see, there's such a corpus body of evidence. The key is to read the evidence, to not just deny the evidence, as some people have done in the media. And they all know what's going on. And they all, unfortunately, not all, but some of them are aiding and abetting the communist regime for money and pressure. I even know my professors, when I was trying to advocate for a human rights group at college, they wouldn't come to my aid because of the political pressures from the...
I heard about a case at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver where some students put up a Free Tibet banner and a Chinese organization pressured the university to take it down.
Exactly, and they pressured my organization at the University of Georgia and Georgia State also to be removed. But because I clarified the truth to the dean and the faculty directors, they didn't do it. I luckily got to them before the communist regime did. Because the thing is, the Chinese student organizations are actually just like the Confucius Institutes; they're all masks to the communist regime's agency in China. And I was told this when I had to sit down with the Federal Bureau of Investigation after receiving threats back in the early 2005, and the FBI told me that they had been monitoring the Chinese student organizations in the universities that had been specifically placed in there by the communist regime to monitor activity and spy on America. Oh, it's the intricate spy networks that have been going on in China. You know, it's China that has been hacked in, not the Russians. The Chinese have been colluding and spying and buying up the Hollywood media and the Hollywood studios and the political correctness. All these tools have been cultural Marxist tools that are being used by the communist regime, influenced by the Chinese communist regime out of China. Just like North Korea, which is a whole other different story, but the nuclear weapon program has been completely founded by China. So everything is coming out of communist China. It is the communist Chinese, not the Russians, not the Iranians. The source of this evil is the communist Chinese, but they love that they are not in the limelight. They are the masters of deception. But anyway, getting back to the topic at hand, I'd love to share with you about Anastasia Lin.
Sure.
Okay.
For today, many of you probably heard about the horrific organ transplant abuse in China, including reports that Falun Gong practitioners and other prisoners of conscience are killed to supply the lucrative trade in human body parts. I first learned about these allegations nearly a decade ago, when David Matus and David Kilgore, and also the Miss World Canada 2003, Nazanin F. Xinjiang, were speaking about it in Vancouver. But it took me a long time to nearly confront the gravity of this crime, to consider deeply what it means that tens of thousands or perhaps hundreds of thousands of innocent people are being killed for their organs. The first time I was made to grapple seriously with this issue was when I starred in a film called The Bleeding Edge, which is based on true events. In it, I played a Falun Gong practitioner imprisoned for her beliefs, who was tied to an operation table as her vital organs are removed to be sold for a profit. Acting in this scene required me to imagine what this process would be like from the standpoint of the victim. And I had to imagine the sheer terror of knowing that death was imminent. It was a feeling of utterly helplessness, of being at the mercy of a cold-blooded murderer who would show me none. On the street, if someone assaults you and steals your purse, you can scream for help. Tied to a hospital bed in a surgical room of a labor camp, no one can hear you scream. In China, it is the state itself that is involved in organ stealing. As I consider this crime while preparing for my film's performance, I felt engulfed by the profound vulnerability and the injustice of it all. So it was a turning point for me, which made me realize that it is my duty to do all in my power to generate awareness about this issue. And I hope that you will feel the same after today's hearing. One of the factors that made it difficult to really grasp the magnitude of these crimes is that the victims, Falun Gong practitioners, are still not very well understood. Despite being among the most severely persecuted group in China, perhaps it is harder to really sympathize with them, with these people whose beliefs are rather foreign. So today I would like to shed some light on what Falun Gong really is, and why they're being persecuted by the Communist Party. Falun Gong is many things, a set of meditation exercises, a moral code, and a way of life. If you have seen people practicing it in the park or in front of European Union today, you may have noticed that the exercise and meditation forms are very similar to Tai Chi and yoga. Falun Gong was and still is a social phenomenon. Because Falun Gong has no hierarchy or organizational structure, doesn't involve money, and doesn't really keep membership, no one knows exactly how many practitioners there were in China. But in 1998, the State Sport Administration estimated that there were 70 million to 100 million practitioners in China, more than the membership of Communist Party. Now, this is a major reason why Falun Gong was targeted by the Communist Party, and such a huge independent group was unprecedented in a communist community, a Communist Party regime history. And this explains how organ harvesting could come about. Was potentially millions of Falun Gong practitioners incarcerated in China's vast network of prison camps, they become worth more death than alive. Their organs were worth money. They are blood types, and when a blood match is made, they can simply be led away and killed, or simply put under anesthesia to have their organ removed while they are still alive. The mass killing that we're talking about today is not an abstract concept. The victims are real people, and they're innocent Chinese citizens. I know that prisoners of conscience sometimes give people the impression that these people are prisoners, but we are talking about innocent Chinese people.
And that was Anastasia Lin at the European Parliament.
Has she been involved in your organization?
She's involved in the Coalition Roundtable, and she works closely with the investigators. She knows about StopOrganHarvesting.org, but there, like I said, there are many documentaries. She does a lot of films. She was involved in the film called The Bleeding Edge, about a Falun Gong practitioner playing a Falun Gong practitioner who was killed for her organs. And she also is a part of the coalition to investigate the persecution of Falun Gong, and their website is endtransplantabuse.org. So it's just the amount of evidence, Robert, and everybody, as I am sharing with you, it shows you, and you can get a sense. I mean, you have intuition, you can feel this is going on. I mean, this cannot be covered up anymore. Back in the early 90s and the early the late 2000s, people still thought, or even a couple of years ago, thought, this is not going on. How can this be happening? But this is just a matter of, yes, it's going on, or am I covering it up? And because the body of evidence, the corpus body of evidence is exemplary. I mean, it's so incredible that just more and more are coming out. And I don't know how much time we have left, but I would love to share with you David Mattis, his testimony at the Scottish Parliament about what he has four different types of evidence that he can share with us.
We have about 10 to 15 minutes.
Perfect. Now, that would be great. That would be great. Yeah, I would love to share with you.
Okay, go for it.
Okay.
He wrote a report in July 2006, a second version, January 2007, a third version in book form under the title Bloody Harvest, November 2009, a book, a collection of essays that came out in August 2012. So there's a lot of material. The two reports are posted on the internet, and the books are available it can be purchased. And obviously, in the few minutes, it's impossible to sort of give you the wealth of detail that supports the conclusions. But let me just say a few things about that. One is the telephone calls. We had callers calling into China, investigators, pretending to be relatives of patients needing transplants, and asking the hospitals if they had organs of Falun Gong practitioners for sale. And we got admissions throughout out China. Yes, we do. The reason the callers indicated they were calling was that Falun Gong is a set of exercises. The practitioners are healthy. Their organs are going to be healthy. And the callers were pretending to be relatives of patients that needed these organs. So we got admissions throughout tape, throughout China, tape transcribed, translated, saying, yes, Falun Gong organs for sale. Now, the Chinese government did a documentary responding to our report, and in that report, they interviewed a couple of people that we called. One of them was Liu Guoping. So they present Liu Guoping a transcript of the call, and he says, yes, I got the call, and yes, I said most of these things, but the stuff here and there about Falun Gong, I didn't say, accusing us basically of fiddling with the transcript. But there's no acknowledgement that we have him on tape, and no explanation of how we possibly could have interwoven seamlessly what he, in his own voice, what he denies having said and what he admits having said. Yet for the Chinese people, all they would see is this propaganda documentary, and certainly not our report or our website, which is blocked in China. So that's one piece of evidence. A second piece of evidence is blood testing. We found that Falun Gong practitioners who got out of prison and not out of China told us systematically they were blood tested and organ examined, and it wasn't for their health because they were being tortured. But it is necessary for organ transplants because you need blood type compatibility and ideally tissue type compatibility as well. The people who got out of prison who were not Falun Gong practitioners told us the same thing, that the people they saw in prison who were Falun Gong practitioners were going through these tests and they were not. And we found this, we found practitioners around the world telling us this. And it wasn't the matter, matter that was of immediate concern or interest to them because they weren't harmed by the blood testing. In fact, what they wanted to talk about was their torture, and it took a while to sort of find out from each of them by talking to them that this was systematically happening. And of course, these people didn't know each other, hadn't talked to each other, and yet we found this pretty regularly everywhere. And so that's a second factor. A third factor is the numbers. China, in terms of transplant volumes, is number one in the world after the United States. Waiting times are very short, whereas everywhere else they're very long. And China, until this year, didn't have a donation system. Where are the organs coming from? Well, the Chinese government says prisoners sentenced to death. Well, what's the death penalty numbers? They won't tell you. We do know that they've been going over down over time because they've changed the procedures to centralize death penalty from regional courts to Supreme Court. They've cut down the number of death penalty offenses, but transplant volumes have remained constant. There's no national organ donation system. There's a huge amount of hepatitis in the prison system, which makes a lot of the organs unusable. And we estimate that about, in order to supply 10,000 organs a year, there'd have to be death penalty volumes of about 50,000 a year. And the highest estimates of death penalty volumes in China are about a tenth of that. There is no explanation other than the one we've come up with, the Falun Gong prisoners. The Falun Gong prisoners, they represent a huge population within the Chinese system in the hundreds of thousands. They don't self-identify to protect their immediate family, which means that the relatives don't know where they are and the jailers don't know who they are, so they're extremely vulnerable. They are subject to extreme vilification through hate propaganda, which means that they're depersonalized and dehumanized and marginalized. So we have this very vulnerable population. The last factor I'll mention here, although there's much more one could get into, but it's relevant to the jurisdiction of Scottish Parliament, is that as we look around the world and in China about the precautions that should be put in place to prevent this abuse from happening, they're not there, neither in China nor elsewhere. we don't have in China, obviously, one can see that if one knows the system in China, we don't have the rule of law. When we started, the law itself didn't require consent from prisoners for sourcing from organs. They did change that, but there's no way of enforcing that. There's no traceability. There's no records. There's no access to records. So there's no way of determining whether there's consent, even if they assert there's consent. So we don't have the system in place in China to prevent it. We don't have a system in place abroad to prevent transplanteurs from going into China and participating in organ transplant abuse. There are some legislative proposals in some countries to deal with it. Israel enacted a law to that effect. And it's something the Scottish Parliament could do. Health is a devolved domain. It's not a reserved domain. The Scottish Parliament, in its devolved domain, can enact extraterritorial legislation, and it's done so for female genital mutilation. So it already has legislation about organ transplant abuse called the Human Tissue Scotland Act, which it could simply amend to encompass foreign transplant abuse. And it would send a message. It would be an example. It would help to establish a network to prevent this sort of abuse.
And this is the same thing that the United Nations, or sorry, the United States could do. The House of Representatives, Robert, have unanimously passed resolutions for the last 19 years. And I take my hat off to the United States, also Canada, but still, there's so much to be done. And as David Matthews was mentioning, they can put in place, just like Israel, just like Taiwan, just like Spain has done, they can put in laws to stop organ tourism and transplantation going on in China, from China to the United States and other countries, especially because we have the evidence now. So it's just a matter of courageous people stepping up and doing the right thing.
I heard there was an actual bill by Congressman Dana Rohrabacher.
Yes. Oh, what a fantastic man. Yes, exactly. And Chris Smith as well. Yes. Yes.
And that bill would do exactly that?
I believe so, yes. And he's trying to push it forward. Dana Rohrabacher, excellent, yes. He's been a huge advocate on exposing the persecution and supporting Falun Gong, very much so. I did have a soundbite of him, but I'm not sure. I don't think I have it with me. I wish I could prepare with you, but let me see if I did have something.
We just have about 5 minutes left.
Okay. Here's Dana Rohrabacher, I believe, for 1 minute and 47.
Thank God that we have voices like the Falun Gong in China and here, and we have people in this country who understand that respecting our rights of our people here and trying to seek peace throughout the world is a noble endeavor. And today, I thank all of you for being partners with the good people of the United States in this noble endeavor to save the world from evil forces. Thank you for doing your part. You're here to remind us that all the good people are a team in this world. It's disgraceful that many members of the American business community, in order to make a quick buck, and in fact, make even more millions than they already have, are willing to make deals with China, with a Chinese government that represses its people and threatens the world. Now, we have coalitions of good people here, and you are the good, you have coalitions of people, good people in China. The Falun Gong are bringing us together. God bless you for that. The good people of America stand with you.
So that is Dana Rohrabacher. And again, I want to just let you know, Robert, I take my hat off to you. God bless you and your audience for allowing me to share about this, even if it's been 1 hour. It's such a testimony to your good heart, your good nature, and your discernment of what right and wrong in this world. And I'm very grateful, very grateful.
Thank you so much. And Mitchell, do you have some final thoughts on any information that's crucial that I forgot to bring up, and especially what needs to happen for a change?
Yes, everybody, if I could just reach out and grab your hearts and just let you and just lead you to the website stoporganharvesting.org, endtransplantabuse.org, doctorsagainstforcedorganharvesting.org, DAFOH.org. Learn the Falun Dafa or Falun Gong exercises. The exercises are free of charge. All the exercises are free to learn. You can contact anyone in all around the world in about 114 different countries. They'll show you voluntarily at FalunDafa.org. That's where you can get the exercises. The reports from David Kilgore and David Mattis, you can look up Kilgore, K-I-L-G-O-U-R, Mattis, M-A-T-A-S, the Kilgore and Mattis report. Also look up Ethan Gutman. His last name is G-U-T-M-A-N-N, Ethan Gutman. The Slaughter is his book. And at endtransplantabuse.org, you can download for free the publication called The Slaughter, The Update, with over 2,000 footnotes, about a 600-page report, extremely telling, and all the evidence is there. I just implore everybody to really share with your listeners, your colleagues, your students, if there are any professors listening, family members, and if there are any other reporters out there, or Robert, if you know anybody in your industry, in the talk show industry, and you can pass me along to them and have me on their shows, that would be wonderful as well. But thank you for allowing me to share about this issue with everybody today.
Mitchell Gerber, thank you so much for being on. It's a really crucial issue. It's important to get the information out there.
Thank you, Robert. Take care.